You're with us for the morning show as we check in on how rural Wisconsin is doing amid the pandemic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The early months of the COVID outbreak, we were trained on watching developments emerge from our country's big cities like New York and New Orleans, Chicago, Seattle. But researchers say that rural America is especially vulnerable to the virus and its effects because of an aging population and because of less access to health care. Are you a healthcare provider in a rural area? What have you experienced in recent months? What supplies and assistance are you lacking? What creative partnerships or workarounds have you created due to the pandemic? We're at 800-642-1234. John Ike is director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, which works to improve access to and the quality of rural healthcare. John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's been some months when we last spoke. How are rural areas doing right now amid the pandemic and their healthcare systems?
Well, I would say that they're doing similarly in that the greatest hit from COVID is going to be financial. There are cases, there are places where there have been spreader events, but they're fewer and farther in between. So when you look at a map of cases or incidents in Wisconsin, those clusters are going to be around like Southeast Wisconsin, Brown County, and Fox Valley, et cetera. So from the standpoint of cases, I would say one of the biggest impacts is going to be people postponing care. People are nervous to go in. At first, non-elective was not supposed to go in. And then after that was opened up, people still feel nervous about going into where they might catch COVID-19. And so people are postponing their care. They're calling later than they normally would. So when the EMS shows up at the door where they might have somebody with chest pain, they're more likely to be staying in full cardiac arrest. That means that the patient outcomes are not as good as they could be. The sooner people can get into care, the better their chances long term.
Well, and so, when you postpone care as well and the non-elective procedures, that can have implications on rural clinics that need a flow of those procedures in order to make their budgets work.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Both when I talk to rural hospitals and rural EMS services, they've been dramatically hit financially by this. And the federal support has been helpful, but we're talking losses of 50%+ of revenue, and it's hard to overcome that. So we're seeing some closures in EMS services. We're seeing some on the good side, maybe more collaboration and even mergers. At the same time, people are struggling financially, and the communities themselves are not necessarily in a good position. Volunteer services and EMS have long relied on sort of the pancake breakfast or other ways to creatively make revenue, and the residents themselves have less money. People don't want to gather socially. As I said, the financial hit has been one of the hardest.
Can you quantify closures with EMS services? What have you seen?
I don't have numbers on all of them. I've just heard of several cases.
Uh-huh.
EMS in rural has longstanding issues. They tend to be more volunteer based. They tend to be cash strapped. A few party volunteers carrying the lion's share. So they were stretched thin before this happened, and then when their runs went down, their revenue goes down. That was very painful.
Well, that echoes what the head of the National Rural Health Association said throughout this statistic, that as of February 1st, nearly half of rural hospitals were operating at a loss. And this was prior to the COVID outbreak in our country. So if they were in these financial situations heading into the pandemic, I can't imagine what it looks like right now for these hospitals.
Yes, and I will say that that quote and those numbers are reflective of the entire country, mm-hmm. and all the different regions. And in Wisconsin, we're lucky enough to have hospitals in particular that are doing better than the national average, that are stronger. It's not to say they still don't look at their numbers closely, at the end of every month, but there we haven't had a closure in a long time, and I wouldn't say that we had any that are right around the corner from a closure. But this kind of impact, like I said, the loss of this kind of revenue is hard for anyone. You can imagine if your own income were slashed by 50%, how difficult that would be. And that's the position that rural hospitals, EMS, and clinics are all in.
The CARES Act, the first stimulus, had included a $100 billion fund to help hospitals and other healthcare providers. Did those dollars, are they getting to rural health clinics and hospitals?
They are. I would say the biggest struggle of getting that money out has actually been EMS again. I think the hospitals received the money. They were luckily the federal government had a couple of different sources. Our office helped to send out a certain payment, but at the same time, again, it's sort of a drop in the bucket. I mean, it's wonderful that the federal government stepped up the way they did for this, but at the same time, the costs are just too large. It helps, but it's not enough to make things whole again.
What are you looking for out of the second stimulus that's in the works?
Basically, more of the same. I mean, in the previous amounts, they were luckily pretty flexible. The federal government at times can be fairly restrictive about the way it sends payments, the way it directs it. And last time, they were pretty flexible. They said, use this for staffing, use it for services, use it for what you need. And so we're hoping to see that again.
Talking with John Ike, director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, which works to improve access to and the quality of rural health care. Getting at your questions, are you a health care provider in a rural area? What have you experienced in recent months? Tell us what supplies you need. How close do you live to a hospital? Are you concerned about getting access to health care where you live, especially amid the pandemic? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, John, let's circle back to the healthcare amid COVID. If an outbreak were to happen in a rural community, how prepared are rural facilities for these hospitalizations? How many beds are we looking at? How are they constructing these facilities to, put COVID patients in one particular area?
Actually, I think they're doing pretty well. The movement in healthcare over the last 20 years has actually been, we started out with much larger hospitals, and as medicine progressed, people were getting shorter and shorter stays inpatient, and they were doing a lot of their care outpatient, or in other words, they would come for the day and then leave. So our hospitals are built large enough to have more space than we actually were using before COVID. So we literally have sort of footprint that's large enough. Whether or not we have staffing is another issue. When the revenue went down, people had to make the hard decisions about furloughing or laying off staff, which is odd because, in a sense, one of our biggest concerns has always been workforce. But if you just don't have the payroll, you have to make those kind of decisions. So the fear there really is workforce versus beds. We're doing okay with personal protective equipment, masks, and other things. There's not enough yet. The supply chain hasn't fully recovered to the point where if hospitals want to become testing centers. But at the same time, we're in a much better place with that. The biggest concern is if there is an event in a community, are they going to be able to have the staffing? And also, we have a good system of spreading people around. If there's a patient that comes into a hospital, a rural hospital, and if for some reason there isn't enough room, there are nearby hospitals as well. So we can do that. One of the things I think is interesting about this, when I talk to people, is that in the beginning, there was a lot of fear and uncertainty about catching it. I think that's why the shutdowns happened, et cetera. We didn't know what we were dealing with. Now we have a much better sense of it. So there is less uncertainty and less fear, and more people just kind of putting their heads down and doing the work.
When you looked at the furloughs that took place, were they concentrated in specific specialties? Did they happen in certain areas? Did they happen to entire clinics? What patterns did you see out of furloughing?
Well, I think I draw an analogy to sort of personal finance. So if you look at if somebody was had really solid finances before COVID happened, they have more resources to weather it. If they were more on the line, if they were more, you know, if at the end of every month it was just scraping by, then this kind of hit is going to be a much more dramatic one. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily geographic. It sort of depends facility to facility, service to service, whether or not, you know, how strong they were doing before that, and whether or not they needed to take more drastic action like layoffs or furloughs.
And I would assume it was those elective procedure areas and the specialties that work in elective procedures that perhaps had those difficulties with furloughs.
Yeah, well, I mean, in rural, you're primarily looking at primary care. In other words, when you go to your sort of general practitioner, that's what you have more of those specialties. In rural areas, there's not the patient volume for sort of like intense cardiac work, pediatric oncology, those sort of specialties and subspecialties. Those tend to be in the urban areas. So for the most part, most of the practice is primary care. And so it wasn't necessarily that rural would take the hit as far as specialty layoffs. That would happen more in urban areas.
We have John Ike with us, who heads up the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. Are you a physician or clinician practicing in a rural community? Are your patients worried about the pandemic? Do you have a plan for how to respond if cases are diagnosed in your community or there is significant spread? Do you work at a rural hospital? Do you have COVID beds filled now? How have you prepared for cases? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're checking in on rural health care amid the pandemic. According to the liberal think tank, the Center for American Progress, a report published this week indicates the pandemic has quickly spread to rural communities that are not well positioned to address a global health crisis. Your insights, your perspectives from a rural area, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. John Ike is director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, and he stays with us. John, you know, as we were in the throes of the pandemic, there was a renewed push for telehealth. What is the capacity for rural providers to offer these digital telehealth services?
The growth in telehealth use and the regulation changes have been really welcome. Basically, I think what was getting in the way of telehealth before was not so much the technology. Rural facilities, you know, had the fiber for the signal, and they had the equipment itself. But what they didn't have was the ability to sort of make the connections between, say, an urban provider and a rural patient in the sense of referral networks. In the sense of payments, the payment model is kind of strange. It's where historically it's been where the provider themselves is, they get the lion's share of the payment, and where the patient is and the rural clinic, say where they're at, gets a paltry amount. So the math doesn't really work out there. So that was changed with regulation only temporarily. So we're hoping that is sort of made permanent. I think really kind of an interesting area for this is providers reaching out into the community itself. So can patients access this kind of care? Can you get care from your home or from your phone? And that's is a real concern in rural, just because we have both a lack of cell signal reaching everywhere as it should and broadband. Broadband is an issue not just for health, but for rural economic development as well. And when we look at jobs, they go to increasingly in rural areas, they're going to sort of single proprietorships or small, very small companies say under 5 employees, and they depend on the internet for business. Mm. And if they don't have broadband, then they can't keep up economically.
Yeah, we talked yesterday with Brittany Beyer, the executive director of Grow North Economic Development Corporation, about she's chairing Governor Evers' new task force examining high-speed internet needs.
I think COVID-19 and the closures really brought this back to the forefront. Since taking over this position, it was extremely clear that for our rural communities, internet is absolutely an imperative thing to fix as soon as we can.
What kinds of infrastructure changes are needed as you look at healthcare in rural areas?
Well, as far as healthcare goes itself, I think infrastructure is doing quite well. If we look at internet access, mm-hmm. though, I mean, you know, years ago, hospitals made the investments to sort of dig fiber all the way to their hospital and have redundant backup because they've needed this for, again, 20 years. But for the rest of the community, that is not the case. And I think one of the greatest dangers, if I could, is that the government tends to sort of turn this over to the telecommunications companies, sort of the AT&Ts, et cetera, and say, hey, why don't you guys just handle that? Well, it's not in their best interest to handle it because you have a low volume of residents compared to the cost of sort of digging fiber everywhere. So that hasn't worked. So we have to figure out other ways of doing this.
We're talking with John Eich, director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. We're getting a glimpse of how rural health providers are doing amid the pandemic with your insights at 800-642-1234. John, you mentioned there that providers are reaching out into the community. Can you help us understand, like, what policies have made telehealth and other offerings in rural settings easier for providers and their patients?
So again, there's this sense of, because, you know, healthcare is, while a public good, is also people have to be paid for the work that they do. And for whatever reason, and I'm not even sure why, the way this telehealth reimbursements have been set up are really putting rural at a disadvantage. They're saying a rural site cannot provide the care. You know, they can only receive the care, which doesn't suit. I mean, if you look at a system, say like Marshfield, that has incredible specialists at the sort of at the mothership, nonetheless, that would be qualified or sort of classified as a rural area. Those providers could provide services all over the state to other rural areas. But again, the reimbursement is so skewed against them that it doesn't make it worthwhile. So that's been changed temporarily. And again, we'd like to see that continue moving forward.
I was looking at the Iowa Hospital Association across the border, projecting state hospitals there will lose about $1.4 billion by September as a result of the COVID shutdown. How are state hospitals doing?
They are struggling with that kind of impact. I mean, I don't think that's atypical for us. At the same time, like I said, we have been in a pretty good position. It's not to say, I mean, both things are true. That is a dramatic impact. And I don't necessarily get the sense that any rural hospitals are at risk of closing tomorrow. I think we have to acknowledge the fact that this is a very serious impact to our healthcare delivery system and be glad that we're weathering it as well as we are.
Where do you see mergers taking place, and are there any talks right now?
We are in a cycle of mergers before this. I mean, if you look at some of the largest healthcare systems, if you looked at 30 years ago, the level of independent hospitals and clinics compared to today, it's been a big shift. Even the systems that we once considered large, like the Auroras, are now part of Aurora Advocate, et cetera. That is happening more and more, where our regional systems are talking with each other, but national systems are coming in with a lot of resources looking to scoop up options. So this is the way healthcare is going before COVID, and I think COVID's impacts are only going to accelerate that.
Are there changes you're seeing amid the pandemic in the rural system that once a vaccine comes along, once this pandemic is over, that you hope can be sustained?
That's an interesting question. You know, I think that people in any time of crisis, people come together more. And I think we certainly saw that in the beginning of this. But I think we're seeing it overall, and that has been refreshing. It's been nice to see systems reaching out to other systems, hospitals and EMS reaching out to each other more than usual, EMS services reaching out to their neighbors for assistance. So continuing that level of collaboration, I mean, I think Wisconsin is lucky in that we've always done pretty well with that, but seeing it happen even more is something. I think the focus on people has been incredible. People reaching out for neighbors. I mean, that's always a strength of rural, is people know their neighbors better. But again, hearing the stories of people in need and people stepping forward for that, while that's not necessarily healthcare specific, it is an overall social movement that I think we've seen in healthcare as well.
So these silos are coming down within healthcare. At the end of the day, will that benefit these rural communities that are in itself aging?
Yes. I think one of the largest issues we have to look at in rural is, do we have senior-friendly communities? In other words, we have a lot of seniors there, but are the communities prepared to make their needs, to meet their needs in a way that feels good? We can't just have everyone go to a long-term care facility. A lot of rural people want to stay in their homes. So what options do we have for them? For shopping and for socializing, et cetera. So yeah, that is definitely a concern. It was before, and it is more so now with the lack of ability to be as social as we used to be.
John, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking about this.
John Ike is director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. Just ahead, it's On Point. President Trump said he may not accept the November election results. What would happen next? That is On Point. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.